Well, thank you very much for being here. For those of you that feel like you have lower extremity compartment syndrome, would you stand up for just a minute? I'd like you all to stand up, whether you feel that way or not, and I'd like you to kind of face clockwise around the table so that you put your arms out so that you can just kind of touch the person in front of you there. Okay? Just kind of clockwise around there, okay? Now give them a back rub, will you? Okay? Okay, now turn the other way, counterclockwise. Guy on the end's got to need something. Okay. I'm the accordion speaker to make sure that we get to Q&A and we'll be the shortest. Probably two of the most important things that you can hear from me is what I think of you. And that is, I can't think of any way to ruin a lunch hour better than listening to four lawyers after lunch. So I want to tell you that I've worked and I've seen the good and the bad and the ugly, and I think the world of you and what you do. You work miracles. A number of years ago, I was in the office and I got a telephone call from my wife, and she said our daughter Jill is in the hospital. She was going down a hill, put the wrong brake on her 10-speed and plowed the asphalt with her head, and she was unconscious. So we went to Cottonwood Hospital, and for 3 days while this little girl was unconscious, I watched you take care of her. Just about a year ago, I had another opportunity to be with a little four-year-old granddaughter who had, while her parents were away, had fallen out of a 6-foot window onto some concrete and hit her head and her eye on the concrete. And I spent the evening in Primary Children's Medical Center while she had an orbital fracture and a basal skull fracture, and I watched you. I watched the emergency room folks, I watched the ambulance folks, I watched the nurses, I watched everybody else, I watched the dietitians, and I want you to know that you amaze me. And I am honored to be able to serve with this profession and have been for a lot of years. So thank you for what you do. In spite of all of the scary stories, and we see the good and the bad and the ugly, but we do see some of the good. And so thank you for what you do. Now, I know what you think of us. I was in Gunnison the other day and I listened to three doctors. They were talking about what profession was the easiest profession to operate on. The first was a young guy that was just out of his residency, and he says, well, it's clear to me that the easiest profession to operate on are accountants, because all you have to do is let them open them up and all their parts are numbered. So you do whatever you do, put them back by the numbers and sew them up. And the other one that had been around 10 or 15 years, she said, well, I used to think that way, but I think it's engineers, because all you have to do is slit them open them up, and their parts are color-coded. So you do whatever you need to do, put everything back by the colors, and sew them up. And then they turned to the more experienced physician, Jan Christensen, and said, so what do you think? And Jan said, well, it's clear to me after all these years of practicing that the easiest profession to operate on are lawyers, because all you have to do is slit them open them up, and there are only two moving parts, the mouth and the rear end, and they're interchangeable. Somebody said that's called an end-to-end anastomosis. Well, I'm glad to be with you here today. My area is credentialing. I have a primer there, but I'm not going to go through all of that, because that's not what we're here for. We're here to talk about some criminal aspects. There are a couple of things that I want you to know, and that is within the last 6 to 9 months, we've had some issues that would impact a physician significantly, not only criminally, but from a credentialing standpoint. One that many of you know about that was in the papers here in Weber County was a physician who was found to have significant child porn on his computer. He was a pediatrician. He was very soon out of business. We automatically put an automatic suspension on his privileges, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute. And he was gone overnight, never to return. We had another who was involved with some of the charges that Rod and Aaron and Julie have talked about. He had some charges against him. He was very open and said, let me tell you exactly what happened. Opened up everything to us. We did an investigation and said, that makes sense. You work it out with the feds. We'll watch. And when you've worked it out with them, then just come back to us. And really, nothing happened so far as these privileges are concerned, but it could have. And the important thing there is he was very open. He was not defensive. He was not secretive. And he was able to solve some things. So what I'm going to do is, if I can work this, there we go. I'm going to go, if you have this in front of you, I'm going to go to slide number 5 because there are a couple of things that are important for you to know when you're involved in criminal action. On slide 5, it says an initiation of corrective action. And by the way, I've done this so that you'll have an overview. So if you ever need to be involved in corrective action in a hospital, you need to know that the bylaws of a hospital or of whatever facility you have are a contract with you if you're on the medical staff. Sometimes with advanced practitioners, it's the same way. They have those same, but particularly for medical staff members, it's a contract, and the hospital needs to proceed in this way with regard to your privileges. And so I've put that there so that you could read it on your own time. We don't have time to go through it, nor would I want to, but it's something there if you ever need to go back through it. On this one, there's one word that's highlighted, and that is, or in all caps, and that's investigation. The reason that's important is, if an investigation starts at the hospital, you immediately need to think what these three guys automatically think, and that is, we've got an investigation. I have to be careful, because if I do anything so far as give away any privileges or resign or retire, it's reportable to the data bank. Okay? We've got a data bank issue that is very important, and sometimes in the midst of the criminal issues and all of this other stuff, we kind of forget about that. There have been times that I've met, actually, Julie and I've had a conversation with, over the years. And by the way, they've talked about getting to lawyers, and I want you to know that I don't represent docs as part of this. I represent the hospital and the medical staffs and the governing board. But for doctors, I've sent a lot of people over to Julie and her folks because it's important for you to have good quality representation. But there are times when I have said, we can't do anything to solve this now. Because there's an investigation going on, your doc can't resign until we resolve this. So be aware, that's a red flag word. And particularly since the National Practitioner Data Bank has just come out with some new guidelines, they are very, very tight on what is an investigation. It means when the investigation starts, and it's not over until the board decides that it's over, and so it's finished. So that's an important one. Now, if you would go to number 8, and I'm going to skip to that one. This has to, actually, I'm going to go further. There's the National Practitioner Data Bank, okay? And then I'm going to go to one that involves suspension. This is very important because anytime we have criminal action, there are three types of suspensions that can occur. One of them is an investigative suspension that is generally less than 14 days. It is not reportable. It can be renewed for an additional 14 days if the medical executive committee feels that you need that amount of time in order to complete the investigation. It can also be added on to ad nauseum, but normally they don't do that. Once you've already done one investigative suspension on top of another, then we look at, is it time to do a summary suspension? So the investigative gives the medical executive committee an opportunity to look at the facts. If you'll think about a suspension as being, if you can imagine a car that is headed right straight toward a passenger or a pedestrian in a crosswalk, and it looks like that car is going to hit the pedestrian. You don't know for sure. A suspension gives us an opportunity to lift that car 1 foot off the pavement so it does not go anyplace, to look at it, and if it's not going to hit the pedestrian, to put it down and let it move on its way. That's all it is. It is not final action. It is an opportunity for us to suspend privileges, either all or partial, of a physician in order to protect patient care. And a lot of times when there are criminal actions that are involved, we will do that. And we'll do that strictly for the sake of patient care. Now, if you get involved in a car accident or something like that, we're not going to worry about that. On the other hand, if you've got a DUI and somebody says, I have a feeling that that physician was impaired, he was just here an hour ago, and he was impaired in the emergency department, you can just bet that we're going to have an investigative suspension or a summary suspension to be able to look at that to make sure that it's not impacting patient care in the hospital. Okay, the second is a summary suspension. That becomes a reportable event if it goes over 30 days. So you can be summarily suspended for a period of 30 days, 29 days, 28 days. And sometimes a board will do that for a couple of reasons. Number one, for patient care. Number two, because they will feel like it's important for a physician to be able to get the message, particularly if they've dealt with an issue over a period of years and nothing has happened, they've had additional smaller corrective actions, they may do a probation, but they almost also may suspend for a period of 28 days, okay? We just had one where they decided to suspend for a period of 35 days. Now think about that. There's a great message to that. It's not just 5 days more than the 30-day reportable. It's the board saying, you haven't listened to us, you haven't done what is important for to preserve patient care here, therefore we are mandating this so it will become reportable. Okay? We're less interested in non-reportability than we are in you getting the message and making the change. And by the way, I believe in this system. I really do. I've watched it change some amazing professionals so that they can change, make the changes in their lives. I saw one physician a number of years ago who had been involved with a number of issues with a nurse, and he had been suspended a number of times, and he was giving her medications that he shouldn't have. He'd done two or three DNCs on her. He was on probation in his home. He was on probation in his practice. And finally, some very, very stiff action was taken. His brother happened to be on the medical executive committee. And his brother, as I looked around that medical executive committee, I thought, this is one individual who really cares. He told us, he says, you know, he's on probation. This is what's happening. If we don't do something, he's going to lose everything that he once considered sacred. And he, in fact, he may have ended up just like Julia's individual. Who took his own life. And so tough action was taken. When it went from the Medical Executive Committee to the governing board said it's not tough enough. It's not tough enough. We've had problems with this physician for so long, needs to be tougher. So they put a joint conference committee together. And I did something that I never, using normal good judgment, would do. I put the brother on the joint conference committee because I knew he cared. And it's amazing. They took his privileges away for a year. He was able to work in his office. About 10 years later, he retired from the practice with his eyes clear, his shoulders straight, and a wonderful pillar in his community. And so this is a process that works. Now, if you go to the next one on suspensions, we get to the one that's probably the most important, and that's an automatic suspension. If there is certain criminal action or certain things happen, it is, your privileges are automatically suspended without any additional action. For example, if you lose your medical malpractice insurance at 5 o'clock, expect at 5:01 that you will not be able to do surgery or admit or treat a patient because it's done. Hospital doesn't have to do anything. There's no action, no nothing. Once that happens, it's done. If you lose your license, all of those things, and there's a list of things that happen here. There are no procedural hearing rights. Sometimes there's an opportunity to meet with the medical executive committee so that they can make sure that they have the appropriate facts and they want to be fair. But there's that suspension. Now, if you go down to the third automatic suspension one, this is the one that is involved criminal action, and it says is involved or alleged to be involved in defined criminal activity, including all crimes involving the delivery of or billing for medical care, dishonesty involving harm to or harassment, mistreatment or abuse of a patient or any other person. And so those are things that are important. Once that comes up and once you are involved or alleged to be involved in that, there may be an automatic suspension. And what that does, that again pulls you up off the pavement so that the medical executive committee can then meet and they will then make a determination as to what the next step is. Okay? Now, if I could just mention a couple of things. We've mentioned a whole bunch of things today. I would just say that most of our problems have to do with openness and communication and carefulness and trust. And that means trust and verify. Oftentimes with your staff, sometimes you trust too much without verifying. We all have to have trust. We have to trust those that we work with. But you need to make sure that they are doing things appropriately when they are acting in your name. If you could kind of just sit quietly for a minute and ask yourself, where is my greatest area of risk? I have a firm belief that there's nobody that will be able to answer that question better than you. And if you answer the question, and then if you take the next 6 months in being able to solve that question, your care will go up and your risk will go down. Okay? That reminds me of as I conclude here, the story of Charlie Brown as he was getting ready to go back to school, and they were given the assignment to write about their summer vacation. So Linus writes about going to the beach and playing baseball, and then he writes on the bottom, "But isn't it returning to these hallowed halls of education that makes the summer sublime?" And he signs his name and he takes it up to the teacher. He stands there while she reads it, and she just beams, and she says, "Linus, that's an excellent paper." And then he walks down and he passes Charlie Brown, who has just got his name on the paper, and he says, "Charlie, as the years go by, you learn what sells." Now, you know what sells in your own practice. You know where your areas of weakness are. You know what they are, and I'm convinced that nobody can solve them better than you. Thanks for letting us be with you.